It's time to head into the barn. This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn.
In the barn.
Talking horse racing news, events, and a whole lot more. Here's your host, Jason Beam.
All right, welcome into the barn, the Bet America Radio Network. And a glorious Wednesday to y'all as we are on NHC Eve. The NHC getting underway tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday from fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. And I will be there on site and look very, very, very forward to watching the National Handicapping Championships play out. We'll have some great shows for you while we're there. We'll do some interviews. And old Jake's going to have a little fun in Las Vegas. I haven't been since 02, so I'm pumped up. But I got a lot of driving done today, a lot of road time, listened to some Howard Stern in the morning, and then a little bit of radio in the afternoon. And it was weird. I left Reading, and it was very nice out. And then San Fran, literally from about 70 miles out of Sacramento all the way through Sacramento, it was just terrible fog. You couldn't see more than, you know, maybe a couple hundred feet in front of you. And It was a little bit weird. Like, when I got to downtown Sacramento, I couldn't even see the skyscrapers. So you could just see the very, very bottoms of it. But got to drive through Yolo County, which is always funny. It makes me laugh because, like, now the kids all say the whole Yolo thing. And so, I don't know. I always find that enjoyable. And I got to do the most California thing of all, enjoy an In-N-Out burger in Merced, which was just fantastic. Actually, let me rephrase that. I got to enjoy In-N-Out burgers, plural, because there was two of them. I'm team two burger, not burger and fry. I always get, like, whatever burger I'm going to get, and then, like, a small hamburger instead of fries. Like, I don't... Fries, there, you know, you greasy all the salt, and then driving after that, I feel terrible. So, love the In-N-Out burger, but got to Bakersfield and set up shop to do the show for tonight. We're going to be joined by Teresa Gennaro, who's a writer, has published in numerous racing publications. You know, Forbes.com is one site she writes about horse racing for, but also Blood Horse and many others. But she had an article that came out on Monday on thoroughbredracing.com, and it was about sexism in horse racing. The title of the article was "The Institutional Sexism That Plagues Racing at Every Level." And I was driving, so I didn't really read it, but I was seeing all the conversations about it, and I thought, you know what, let's see if Teresa wants to come on the show, and we'll talk about the article. I thought it was very interesting. I think it's a fantastic conversation starter for a topic that a lot of people, myself included, don't necessarily talk about very often or want to talk about. But I thought she had some good points in there. But I also wanted to, you know, kind of address, I think, some issues some people might have with talking about that issue. Because I know watching the reactions on social media, there's plenty of backlash anytime somebody, Teresa included, writes on the topic of women in racing being underrepresented at certain levels. And with the NHC coming up, you know, we don't see a lot of women players, but we have some fantastic women tournament players. One of them who was referenced in Teresa's article, Barbara Bowley, who we're going to see in Las Vegas and hopefully talk to here on the show this weekend. But a little more serious issue, episode of the barn today, but I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good conversation to have, and I look forward to talking with Teresa about it, and we're going to do that here in just a few minutes. But like I said, it's going to be a little bit different week from our normal schedule. You know, I usually have certain things like Song Parody of the Week was usually on Thursday, and we did that yesterday with the Larry Jones song. I hope everybody enjoyed that. And you know, we're going to be pretty NHC heavy this weekend, but got some great guests lined up in the coming weeks. Some Southern California jockeys, talked to a former Southern California jockey that's now riding over at the fairgrounds today, who I'm looking forward to speaking with in the near future. A lot of cool stuff planned here on the Bet America Radio Network, and we so enjoy having your feedback. You can always email the show, barn@betamerica.com. You can find me on Twitter at Beamy Awards, BEEMIEAWARDS. And so lots of fun stuff going on. But like I said, a little different style show today. We're going to talk, we're going to have a little serious conversation with Teresa Gennaro about her article that appeared at thoroughbredracing.com yesterday, and talk about women in racing, not just, you know, at certain levels of racing, but at all levels of racing. So I'm really excited to talk with her. We're going to head out to a short time out. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Teresa Gennaro. On the other side of this break, you're in the barn.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the Bet America way.
All right, welcome back to the Bet America Radio Network. You are in the barn, and we are very pleased to go out to Brooklyn, New York, and welcome in a writer for, you can find her work in Forbes.com, Blood Horse, many other racing sites as well. And she had a great piece that was in ThoroughbredRacing.com yesterday that I wanted to talk about, and we're pleased to welcome in Teresa Gennaro. Teresa, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you, Jason?
Good. Did you guys survive the snow over there?
We did. We did. We got between 2 and 3 feet here in my part of Brooklyn, and it was, you know, beautiful for 24 hours, and now it's just like a big wet mess. But it was kind of fun while it lasted.
Yeah, because I mean, I live in Seattle, and when it snows more than about a half an inch, like everybody just shuts down. And you guys are a little tougher over there, I think, towards the stuff.
You know, we are helped by a lot of our stuff happening underground, so you know, we have that going for us. But yeah, they got it cleaned up quickly enough so that I didn't get a snow day out of it, which is too bad.
So I was traveling. I've been traveling. I'm going down to Las Vegas. I'm in beautiful Bakersfield, California, as we speak right now. But when I'm driving yesterday, I pull over every hour or two, take a little stretch break, and was checking Twitter, and there was a lot of chat about an article, and it turned out to be one you wrote yesterday that was appeared in ThoroughbredRacing.com. It's called "The Institutional Sexism That Plagues Racing at Every Level," and I know this is women in racing is an issue you've talked about before in written pieces as well as on social media. I'm always fascinated by the reaction of not just when articles like this are written in racing, but just in, you know, everyday world. Do you almost know what kind of reaction there's going to be from, you know, multiple different sides when you put out a piece like this?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, yes. It's gone on for long enough. And as you said, I've written about this before. And I knew when I did this one because it was more in depth than some of the other things that I've written. And I really focused on telling other women's stories, things that had been told to me, largely in confidence at some point. And I thought that it had the potential to elicit a pretty strong reaction. I'm not sure that I saw all of the stuff that you did, mm-hmm. But there were a lot of Twitter mentions yesterday, and there are an awful lot of comments on the article. I think it's up to in the low 50s at this point.
Yeah, I did notice some of that, and the reaction is some of what I wanted to talk about tonight with you, because I've noticed, at least for myself, and I've done some work on this, you know, through graduate school and stuff, I have these almost pre-programmed reactions to articles that are in this nature that come up immediately. And I wrote down some notes that I wanted to go over with you later in the conversation, but it does seem like, at least for me, like I have these preconceived thoughts, reactions, answers whenever this kind of stuff comes up. And I don't know why that is, but it does seem like whenever you talk about issues of, you know, women in business, women in racing, there are these reactions that people either get A, really defensive right away, or B, really offensive and kind of, you know, turn on the subject matter. Have you experienced that?
Yes, frequently.
And so how do you go, because, you know, when you mentioned, you know, there's going to be some reaction to it. Is it just one of those things where it means enough to you to where you're going to put up with it? Or is that honestly part of how the conversation gets going?
Well, it is part of how the conversation gets going. And what's interesting is that I think so much of the negative commentary, the negative reactions are what get the attention. Mm-hmm. People, and I do think it's our natural reaction to feel defensive when we hear about stuff that's uncomfortable. I remember, you know, and I've taught in schools. I've been a high school teacher for almost 25 years, and the school world is pretty progressive in most cases. It's, you know, more progressive than a lot of other businesses, and this is something, you know, as you said a few minutes ago, that we talk about and we study a lot. And I think that whether we're talking about issues of race or gender or whatever, when we hear things, I think it is not uncommon for us to feel a little bit defensive and to reassure ourselves. Like, but wait a minute, that's not me. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. I don't think that. That's not true where I work. And I think that some of those defensive reactions are often true,
yeah.
And which is great. But I think the thing that gets a little lost is one person's truth doesn't negate another person's truth. It can be absolutely true that the place where you work and the people that you work with is a really equitable atmosphere, and that's terrific. But it doesn't mean that the stories that were told to me are any less valid or true. It's one of those places where opposite truths can exist. They just don't exist very comfortably.
Well, you know, it was funny because I thought of you know, Adding on your point that you said about, you know, just because maybe you don't do it. In my case, it's a lot of I didn't see it, and I haven't seen it. And part of that is because where I've worked, there haven't been a lot of women in positions of not only positions of power or authority, but, you know, I know from working at Portland Meadows on our management team, there was one woman, and she was the head of accounting. And so from a racing and decision, you know, racing decision standpoint, it was strictly male involvement. And so, but again, it's one of those things that I've never really given a second thought to because, you know, they, when they talk about privilege, you don't really have to in certain situations. But the point I wanted to get to was my initial reaction is to dismiss it and say, no, I haven't seen a lot of that. I think they're, you know, the writer's either complaining or something like that. Until I've heard now from 3, 4, 5 friends who are handicappers at tracks, analysts at tracks, media people at tracks, whatever, who have kind of all echoed exactly what you said in a lot of the article. And that's when I had to kind of do the step back and say, well, okay, I do know these people and I have relationships with these people and I don't think they're lying to me. I really do think that seeing it and hearing it directly from maybe, you know, is maybe where the conversation gets started a little better. At least it did for me.
And that's why I wanted to write that article. I mean, I've written tons of articles in the past where I'm like, okay, I'm at another racing meeting, and woohoo, look, there's another panel, it's all men, or, you know, that kind of thing. And that's great, and it's fine, and there are observations, but that's just kind of me relating something I've seen. And and what made me want to write this article was the number of emails I get from women and phone calls and conversations when I write one of those other articles that say, look, let me tell you about what happened to me. And some of the stories are really chilling. They're awful. And some aren't. Some are just annoying, what people now call microaggressions.
Yeah.
Like the thing that Barbara Boley was talking about where when she was at a she'll be at the NHC this weekend, and she was at a handicapping contest with one of her male partners in her website, and someone approached her and said to the male handicapper, oh, you've got a cheerleader with you.
Yeah.
Look, she's not going to lose a lot of sleep over that. It doesn't do her any material damage, but it's exhausting. And I think that it's also fair to say that one of the reasons that you don't hear about stuff like this very often is because of the risk that women take in telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you kind of get labeled, as I have sometimes, you know, as kind of a loudmouth with an axe to grind. And, you know, people use feminist as a bad word, which I don't really get at all. People just don't want to jeopardize their livelihood or get labeled. And so you might not see it and you might not hear about it, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. And I'm so glad to hear you say that you heard from some women that you know. And it's interesting that the negative comments often are the ones that get the focus and not the ones from the women yesterday who posted on Twitter or in the article, you know, thank you for saying this. Yes, I've seen this. But those kind of get pushed away and dismissed.
Well, what I've noticed, because I've seen retweets from when you'll be at a conference and say, you know, oh, there's this many people on the panel, 0 women, 1 woman, whatever. And I think that a lot of people think that when you say that or tweet it, as opposed to an observation or maybe a, hey, this is what's happening, I think a lot of people see that as, look, she's complaining about this, and stop complaining, shut up. Do you think that's part of how people react to some of those things?
Yes, and they're not entirely wrong. I mean, it is an observation, but I think it's a noteworthy observation. I mean, I think it's 2016. How do you have a really big industry whose primary decision makers and public faces are the ones that are men? A lot of people responded to the article yesterday by saying things like, at the racing organization at which I work, we employ more women than men.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. But still, go to industry conferences, look at the television. You're seeing, of course there are women, and more as the years go by. But still, at those big industry meetings where you've got sort of the decision makers and the movers and shakers, the majority of them are still men. I think there are a lot of women working in the industry. I don't think that there are many who wield the influence of men.
Well, one interesting example I wanted to bring up for that was Tampa Bay Downs, because I know that the president of the track is a woman. And then, so I was curious, because my mom owned a casino for 20 years here in Seattle, And one of the things I always noticed was she almost always had a higher percentage female management staff than male management staff. And it was in a business that was not particularly like that. It, you know, she used to joke the commission meetings were boys club meetings. And so it was interesting to see that she indeed, you know, had hired more female folks in the management staff. So I looked at Tampa Bay Downs just because I remember the president and treasurer was a female. Margot Flynn, the VP of Marketing and Publicity, and then also the Director of Racing and Racing Secretary, a lady named Allison DeLuca. And then also, and you know, again, this could be coincidence, but it could be something worth looking at. Tampa Bay is one of the few tracks that's really been on a big upswing in the last 10 or 15 years and gets a lot of credit from horse players. And so I was curious if you had looked into that track or had any experience with what was going on down there.
I don't. And as a friend of mine commented to me in an email yesterday, there are so many other stories that could come out of it.
Sure.
And that is certainly one of them, to look at those success stories and ask about what's going on with this. How did this happen? Was it deliberate? What do those women's voices bring to the organization? I'm sure there are men in positions of influence there as well. And that seems to me to be the ideal. That you want to have a team around you of people who don't see things all the same way. And I'm not saying that all men see things the same way,
yeah.
Nor do all women. Not at all. But it is more monolithic if you have people who are of all the same race or of all the same sex than if you mix it up a little. And I link to a podcast in the article. It's one of my favorite podcasts. It's Reply All, and it bills itself as a broadcast about the internet. And they talk specifically about this, and it's a person of color, a man, an African-American man, I believe, who quit his job, I think it was at Twitter, because he was so tired of fighting against the kind of lack of diversity efforts there. And there are some social scientists that are talked to in the article about what happens when you mix up the people who are making decisions in your company. And it was really compelling.
Well, yeah, one thing along those lines, you know, I think that your piece was in a lot of ways meant to, this is again my opinion, meant to be a conversation starter, but also to show some examples of people's experiences. But I think one thing people then, at least a lot of people who might, you know, disagree with your stance in the article is how do you get there? Because I think a lot of people oppose, you know, affirmative action kind of things. If you're just plugging people in for numbers, and you'll often hear, as I'm sure you've heard before, well, then you're discriminating against men if you're hiring women for preference. So what do you think are some of the steps to make it happen? Is it literally just a matter of plugging more women in and that you just have to?
Well, I think it's a little bit about just expanding the definition of what you mean by qualified and what you're looking for in candidates. So in my work in high schools, I was a dean of students for a long time. I was head of the English department on several occasions, and in both of those jobs, I had responsibility for hiring. And every time there was a position open in one of the teams that I worked with, I would look around at who we had, and I would go, what are the voices that are represented? What are we missing?
Mm-hmm.
What sort of person will bring value to our department? Who will bring a perspective that we don't already have? And that's how I would start to look for candidates. So it wasn't about white, black, male, female, straight, gay. It was, what do we already have here, and how can we diversify to make our team even stronger? And then, for instance, in a perhaps, you know, funny turn of events, when I'm hiring high school English teachers, by far and away, the biggest number of applications I get are from white women.
Mm-hmm.
So many times when I was hiring, I was looking often at men's resumes first, because that's what serves our kids best, you know, that the boys in our high school really benefit from having male English teachers, male role models. And if there weren't a lot of people of color in our Canada pool or men in our Canada pool, then I would try to figure out where else I could go look. I didn't want to just say, okay, well, we don't have any candidates, let me just hire another white woman. But then you try to just look a little harder, and you network. You know, do you know somebody who's looking for a job? When it came down to it, we always wanted to hire the best person for the job, but who the best person is doesn't always have to be the person with the longest resume and the best degree in the field.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, I've passed my Praxis 1 and Praxis 2 for English, so just saying.
All right. I'm very glad to hear that.
No, actually, before I started with BetAmerica, I had been inquiring into that, and so I took all my my stuff, and I'm going to Las Vegas for the tournament. I know they had a big teacher shortage, and so I had looked into a program they had there for star teachers, but we're digressing now, so I get back.
It's a great gig. I highly recommend it.
Teresa Gennaro joining us, and we're talking about her article from yesterday that appeared at thoroughbredracing.com, The Institutional Sexism That Plagues Racing at Every Level. And one of the interesting comments was Barbara Bowley. Is it Bowley or Bowley? Do you know?
I think it's Bowley, but I'm not sure. We spoke on the phone,
yeah,
and she told me, and I'm embarrassed to say I don't remember.
Well, yeah, I've actually been speaking with her a little bit because she's going to do some work with us through Bet America. But she made a comment about the picks aren't her own, and I thought that was especially interesting because that's another one where I've had some friends who are handicapped at the track who get their picks posted up, and I personally think that maybe a little of this is the Beulah twins thing because I heard that was kind of the case with them. And I feel like maybe that was what started that idea or something, or it could be the entire subject of your article. But, I thought that was real interesting because it's clear that making picks and handicapping is pretty open to anybody who can do it.
And, Ed DeRosa and I were having a little bit of a conversation about this on Twitter last night, and Pete Fornatale and a couple of other people, about how, look, it is an unfortunate fact of contests and tournaments that there are people there who are making picks who are not their own.
Yeah.
I don't think that's exclusive to women. And I'm not a contest player. I don't frequent handicapping contests. But I hear from people who do that is indeed the case.
Mm-hmm.
What's curious to me is why those accusations seem to be more leveled at women than they are at men.
Mm-hmm.
That you see a woman and the sort of default is, is she for real? And I've just heard this from a number of women. Judy Wagner, mm-hmm.
She won the NHC, right?
Yeah. And, she's put up with this, other people as well. And so that just kind of seems to be the unfortunate thing about it. I mean, when the default position is suspicion, you just have to wonder what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of two specific examples of friends who are, are the track handicapper and who've had, folks say that to them. And then I'm trying to think of, anybody else, male friends that have said that, and nobody has. And so one thing I wanted to do with you, when I read through the article yesterday, and I've kind of tried to do this in my personal life in terms of making notes of what my original, kind of defense mechanism is. And I'm curious if these are things you hear a lot. One of the things... My initial comment about more men than women in the sport, jockeys, trainers, bettors, could it just be that men gravitate towards racing at a higher percentage than women?
I think it's possible. I think there is potentially some family stuff there. When I was a little girl, my dad brought me to the racetrack. I mean, my dad did not discriminate between my brother and me about who did what. He took us to hockey games and baseball games and the track in equal measure. But I don't know if that has something to do with it. There are so many, father-son training teams in racing, mm-hmm. so many sons who have gone into it with fathers. I don't know whether women have at times been discouraged. I also just don't know whether it's just harder for women to break into because it's harder for them to get clients.
Yeah. Well, it is racing, trying to think of it, it really is the only sport where women and men compete against each other on the same playing field. I mean, mixed doubles tennis was kind of the only thing I could think of where that's the case. I mean, there's not a women's horse racing league.
Right.
Yeah. And
no,
so,
there's not. And I wonder if it's just the factors of the marketplace. But that was one thing I deliberately didn't address too much in the article. I'm not on the backstretch. I mean, I am on the backstretch, fairly regularly, but not in that capacity of trying to track this down.
Yeah.
It would be interesting, to talk to owners. How do you feel about having a woman trainer?
Yeah, I've flat out heard trainers say, I would never ride a woman jockey.
Yeah.
I mean, I've, You know, and there was a comment, you know, one of the guys in the comment section yesterday, I remember, said, you know, he said something about strength of writers, but then he, you know, proceeded to say, oh, but I, you know, I have a friend who's a writer, and look at us. The example was almost I have tons of black friends.
Yeah.
Example.
And, so I can't be racist.
Yeah. And so that was one of the highlights of the comment section for me yesterday reading the article. But a couple other things that were initial pop-ups where I was kind of trying to go against what you were saying, or at least, you know, in my head. So the two media links you provided, one was a Santa Anita commercial, one was a TVG tweet. And the Santa Anita commercial, you know, the whole dress-up hat, suits thing, like, I personally hate it. But I kind of don't really care if it's advertised. And so, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, why does it maybe bother some women that, you know, the dress up is what's played? But in the article, you kind of said, how often are women in media ever portrayed as bettors? Where in racing, they might show the guys dressed up, but the guys are always holding tickets.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's exactly it. I will say I was kind of troubled by the first frame of that little video, which is of these four women shot from behind.
Their
butts in the middle of the screen. I mean, it was pretty obvious what whoever filmed that wanted people to be looking at. And I just think it's gratuitous and cheap and unnecessary. And yes, I know sex sells and advertising uses sex and it works, blah, 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 blah. So what? So do a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, if you want to market your racing product to women who look at racing as a social event and an opportunity to get dressed up, God bless you. That's great. If that's going to get women to the racetrack, do it. The problem, I think, is when that is the default option,
mm-hmm.
and there's so little variety.
Yeah.
When over and over and over, that's what's seen as women's role at the racetrack.
Ladies hat contests are at every track.
Funny. I didn't end up putting this in the article, but I talked about those two. And I'm not picking on Santa Anita. They were just kind of like, they've been on a little bit of a roll lately with stuff. love Santa Anita. Think it's a great track. Would love to go back. But they, you know, it last May they were going to hold a women's only handicapping contest.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently some people lodged some complaints about it, saying it was discriminatory. So they opened it up, and I think one man entered it. And it was a much smaller contest. The prize mm-hmm. money wasn't as high because they weren't going to have as many entrants. That
yeah.
makes sense. But in addition to the prize money, you won things like hats and clothing. Earlier this month, Santa Anita held another handicapping contest called the King of the West.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of like women, what, need not apply because
yeah.
you want to be the king. But the prizes were money, track packages, that kind of thing. They weren't giving away clothes to the men
mm-hmm.
Who won the handicapped contest. They weren't getting top hats and suits. Is it pernicious or dangerous? Probably not. But it's an interesting example of what tracks think women want.
Yeah, and that's where I do think a lot of times when you get the negative feedback for stuff you write and say on this issue, I do think a lot of it is people saying, oh, that's just not a big deal. And you know, and the other, like, and that was one of the examples I had as well, the TVG tweet of, oh yes, ladies, you can enjoy Caleb. My first reaction was, you know, they're kind of just screwing around and making a funny little joke. But I think your purpose in using it in the article, I'm guessing, was just to kind of illustrate of what is a joke, but is kind of always used as the joke.
Right. I mean, again, it's just this idea that women are not seen as people who enjoy the racetrack for the sporting element of it, for the gambling, for that. But, you know, they're there either to look good or to look at the cute TV hosts. And you're right, in and of itself, those things individually, you're right, shrug it off. But, you know, I could have filled three pages with examples of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it just sort of happens over and over and over, and you feel like, or I feel like, and so do some other women and men, that women as a customer, as a paying customer at the window, is completely invisible. I just don't get it. I mean, these are people who could put money through your windows. Why would you kind of like act like they don't have a place at your racetrack.
So my last little red flag of defensiveness was the salary disparity issue. And this is one where I hear people, whenever I think the 78%, is that the magic number, the 78 cents for a dollar? It seems like whenever that comes up, I see a large group of people who will say that's total BS, or it's because women choose to do this kind of work or that kind of work. And in my head, at first I thought, well, that happens to announcers too, and we're all, you know, like I know guys who work at tracks that were 10 times the purse money that Portland was, and yet Portland paid me more per day for whatever reason, cost of living or what have you. And so, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, well, it's the same job, but you know, different market. And then I know the example you used also said it was with a different company. But it does seem like that stat slash issue, the pay disparity, is one that really gets people fired up.
Yeah, and I don't know why exactly. And I'll admit, there were three different women who told me that story, and it was about, and they were from three different entities.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously did not have access to the budgetary data that they did. It was a judgment call on my part to use it. They are three women I completely trust. Don't see them making stuff up like that. But you're right. Pay is allocated on a lot of different scales. Experience, seniority, you know, that sort of thing. But again, it wasn't just me making sort of a random claim. It was women telling me about their experience. And so I think rather than having that immediate, and I'm not saying this about you, but to anybody, I do get why we all have those kind of knee-jerk defense mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't get is why we can't take a step back and go, rather than starting from a place of BS,
yeah,
why can't we start from a place of maybe that could be true?
Yeah, I think some of that goes to our kind of hyper-partisan conversations, be it because I even thought about saying that, like, is some of this stuff, is it a liberal and conservative thing? Because they're, you know, from what I know about some people's politics, on social media at least, they do tend to kind of line up. But I don't see it as an issue that should be liberal or conservative, because it seems like, if anything, it could be more capitalistic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why, you know, I think that, you know, it looked like somebody, you know, lobbed at me the feminist label last night. Is this? And I couldn't really tell whether he was using it as a negative epithet or not. Mm-hmm. But forget feminism. I mean, if you believe that women and men should be paid, you know, equivalent wages for equal work, if you believe that women are smart, talented, and committed to horse racing, if you believe that they have strengths to bring to the job and deserve equal representation, then I don't think it matters what your politics are or what you label people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I don't know who would argue with that. Like, I don't understand why that has to be something that's kind of a point of contention.
Yeah, and you know, I'm so glad you came on, because, like I said, when I read it, I thought, you know what, I think we're going to have an interesting conversation. I think that's what the article served a great purpose in starting that conversation. And I did notice yesterday a lot of people retweeting it and stuff, and you know, gals who I follow on Twitter who would just retweet it but not comment on it. You know, it was almost kind of like just take a peek at this kind of thing. But where I got the greatest benefit from at least learning a little bit about where a lot of women in racing I know are coming from is from literally just talking to my friends that are women in racing. And that would be my number one suggestion, aside from reading and doing that, would be just to talk to people. Because I think hearing people's personal stories, at least for me, has always penetrated the wall of you know, our, I don't know if the word's institutional, but just those long-held thing,
yeah.
You know, and so for me, you know, I grew up where there was very few minorities and where I didn't have any interaction with gay people. And so I remember, you know, going to college and having, you know, those preconceived notions kind of thing. But, you know, then my roommate's gay and I kind of start to realize, like, wow, you know, there's just not much difference here. And so, go ahead.
Sorry. No, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, at least for me, personal exposure was always the best educator.
Yeah, and you make, there are two things that, and we were talking before about the idea of privilege, and, you know, I grew up in a family that didn't have a lot of money, so when I kind of got into the world I'm in now, and people were talking about white privilege, and I'm like, white privilege? Like, I had no privilege when I was growing up. You know, I've been working since I was 16. You know, nobody, I didn't have a trust fund, there's no privilege, and then I was like, oh, right. I'm privileged simply because I happen to be white, you know, because people aren't turning me down for jobs or apartments because the color of my skin, because I'm not getting arrested, or people aren't following me around with suspicions of shoplifting because of the color of my skin. That's that unconscious privilege. And the second, and you're right. And so, you know, what you just said about listening to people tell you their stories, that to me makes that article worth having written it and makes it a success. Because to deny that this is an issue is to basically look at the women who told their stories and say either they're not telling the truth or they're unimportant. And that I don't get at all. So if it makes anybody talk to their women friends or listen to their women friends when their women friends want to talk to them mm-hmm. and to hear about it, I couldn't ask for anything more than that.
Well, and part of that, too, is I know at least from talking to my guy racing friends, the conversation has never come up when it's just us guys.
Really? How shocking.
Never. The number of times I've had conversations about gender, sex, privilege with men is zero, unless it was in school and it was, you know, part of the, you know, we're being asked to do it. And Right. And so it's, you know, as I said earlier, it's easy, you know, for me, I could go through my whole life without really having to have that conversation. But I think you miss out on a little enrichment, obviously, but.
And that's part of our privilege also, right?
Yeah.
You know, whether if we're talking about race, white people can go through their lives without ever having to think about it. If you're a man, you can go through your life without having to think about it. And that in and of itself is, you know, at least part of the definition of privilege.
Yeah, well, Teresa, I really appreciate your time. And like I said, I think it's a good discussion that folks are having online. And I think it's a good discussion to have here on the show. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was a real pleasure.
All right, Teresa Gennaro joining us here on the Bet America Radio Network. We'll be right back after this short timeout. You're in the barn.
Hello, this is Kayla Strah, and I'm here to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It is the fastest growing legal, safe, and secure website to place all your bets on horse racing. BetAmerica covers over 200 racetracks from North America, the UK, and my home country, Australia. New players to BetAmerica receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn with Jason Beam.
All right, back here in the barn, the Bet America Radio Network, and our thanks to Teresa Gennaro for joining us. Like I said, a little bit different, more serious episode of the barn. I mean, we like to keep it light here, but I thought it was a fun, important conversation to have, and I hope folks continue to have the conversation out there in the racing world and, of course, on social media. So my thanks to Teresa for joining us. My thanks to you, the listener, as always. Again, if you have questions or feedback on the show, you can always email me, barn, B-A-R-N, at betamerica.com. The next show you hear will be live from fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Very excited to get over there tomorrow morning. And it's going to be a great weekend at the NHC. Look forward to bringing you as much of the action and interviews and all sorts of stuff that we can. So, again, my thanks to Teresa. My thanks to you out there and the listeners. And we'll see you on the next episode in the barn.